Yes, delivering for Amazon was horrible. It's long hours with impossible deadlines. It's stressful, and management comes down on you hard when you don't meet their absurd standards. My friends and family saw how much it drained me and tried to convince me to get another job, but I never listened. I needed the money, and it was hard to find a job at that time. I did end up leaving, but not for the reasons most do. The day started like any other. It was an early start, 6 a.m. So I chugged my coffee on the way to the warehouse as the sun rose from the horizon. They gave me my shipments for the day, and I knew it was going to be a long one. I got the route that went into the more rural areas, which I hated. You get fewer packages and stops, but there is a greater distance between each delivery, so you end up driving more. I filled up my coffee cup and my water bottle and hit the road. I started in a suburb, so it was easy. Many dogs barked at me, a few apartments with hidden front doors I had to hunt for, so it was a usual morning. I started getting to the packages that took me out to the boonies, and the drive between each stop grew longer and longer. I made a playlist full of old school rock that helped me though. The route took me deep into the woods, which led me to the house. There were tall black metal gates in front of the driveway with cobwebs gathered in the metal design. I rang the doorbell and the gates creaked open. I couldn't see the house from the bottom of the hill. It was hidden in the tall trees. The driveway took me up to a dark mansion that looked like it housed the Addams family. Crows congregated in the front yard, along with a large black mastiff chained to a post. The dog wasn't distracted by the crows. He kept his eyes on me. This house had multiple large packages, so it took a couple of trips to get them all out on the front porch. The dog growled at me each time I went up to the door to drop a package. Once all the boxes were in place, I went to ring the doorbell, but I couldn't find one. Instead, I used a demonic-looking lion holding a metal ring in its mouth. I knocked three times and turned to leave. I hopped back in my van and got out of there as quickly as possible. The gate slowly opened to let me go, but I didn't make it far when my tire blew. I checked my phone to call for help, but there was no service. My next stop was 15 miles away, and the creepy house wasn't even a mile in the other direction. It felt like my only option was to go back up to that creepy mansion to see if I could get service or use their phone to call Amazon or someone to help. I made my way back to the house. The gate swung open, and I squeezed through once I was big enough for a person to fit through. I approached the black double doors and lifted the ring in the lion's mouth. Before I was able to slam it down, the door opened. A tall, broad man stood before me.
"Can I help you?"
he asked in a deep voice. "Yeah, sorry to bother you. My tire just blew, and I need to call someone at my work so they can dispatch someone to help. Do you have a phone I could use? Mine has no service." The man took a deep sigh.
"Yes, come in."
The inside was dark and musty. The big man told me he needed to look for his phone and we'd be back in a moment. He instructed me to stay in the foyer. He wasn't gone long when a woman peered around the corner. She must have been the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. She had blue doe eyes and long brown hair.
"Who are you?"
Her voice was as delicate as she looked. "I'm Marcus. My car broke down."
"Poor boy."
She came up to me and caressed my chest.
"Can I give you a tour?"
My heart began to race. Her blue eyes gazed into mine, and I couldn't think of an answer. Her hand traced my chest, down my arm, to my hand, and she led me to the stairs.
"Come in."
"You know, that big guy, I assume your husband, told me to wait in the foyer."
"He'll forgive you."
She led me up the stairs. I kept looking back to see if her husband was back with the phone. The beautiful woman took me down the hall into a lavish bedroom. "You know, I'm really just here to call for..."
"Shh."
Things were finally happening for me, but suddenly, the big man appeared in the doorway and raged at what he saw. He stormed over to the bed and ripped his wife off of me. I put my hands up in defense. "I promise, man, she came onto me. I wanted to wait in the foyer for you." He grabbed me by my arm and led me out of the room. His wife followed, giggling the whole time. I assured him I had no interest in his wife and just wanted to use a phone to get the hell out of there. He gripped my arm tighter and dragged me down the stairs and around the corner into a dark room. He turned the lights on, and it looked like a torture chamber. All sorts of weapons hung from the wall. He slammed me down on the table that was in the middle of the room and began to fasten my arms and legs so I couldn't escape. "Listen, I really don't want any trouble. I just need help changing my tire." He continued like he didn't hear what I was saying. His wife floated around the table like a devious fairy, still giggling. I began to try and get out of the arm cuffs. The man was in such a rush to tie me down, he didn't do it very tightly. He rolled up a cart of knives and scissors next to the table and told his wife to take off my pants, and she obeyed.
"To seduce another man's wife is an abomination that deserves punishment,"
the man spoke. He picked up a large pair of shears.
"The price is your manhood."
His wife's giggles turned into sharp laughter. I watched as he drew the shears closer to my manhood, and right before he was close enough to clasp it, my hand broke free and I slapped him. It wasn't that powerful of a slap, but it caught him off guard enough that he stumbled back. I grabbed one of the knives on his table, and as he came back to handle me, I stabbed his arm. He recoiled long enough I was able to take off my leg cuffs, grab my pants, and ran out. His wife wasn't laughing anymore and tried to block me at the door. I pushed her aside and ran for my life. I ran down their long driveway. I could hear their dogs barking fade with each sprint. Once I reached the gate, I put my pants on and squeezed myself through the metal bars. I hitchhiked back to the warehouse, and when I told my supervisor what happened, he didn't believe me. So he fired me on the spot for losing a van with packages. Honestly, I wasn't even upset because I planned to quit after that trauma. My husband Richard bought stuff on Amazon a lot. Mostly sports memorabilia and presents for me and his family. Every few days, there was always a new box or two on our doorstep. Usually, Richard seemed fine if I opened the boxes before I got home from work. We didn't keep any secrets between each other. One day, though, Richard told me that he had a very special box coming in that afternoon. He didn't want me to look at it or even touch it. I assumed it was a present for our upcoming anniversary, so I promised him that I wouldn't. When the box came, I saw that it was about as big as a microwave. I remembered what Richard said, so I left it sitting on the doorstep. Usually, Richard came home exactly at 5:30. But that day, he sent me a text at 5:15 saying that he had a lot of work to do and was going to spend the night in the office. He'd never done that before. He was the manager of his own company, so he made a lot of money. But whenever problems came up at work, he'd always have his employees deal with it. Worse than that, his message didn't include his usual emojis. I texted him back, asking if everything was okay, and he sent me a one-word response. "Fine." Then, I texted him that I was going to bring his package inside. He instantly messaged me back in all capital letters. "Do not touch it." I really wanted to know what was going on, but I forced myself to think about other things. Richard and I have been together for 8 years, and I trusted him. I stayed inside all evening, watching TV. I went to bed pretty early, but I could not go to sleep. I kept thinking about Richard. Around 10, I was lying awake in bed when I saw our porch lights turn on through the window. At first, I thought that Richard had finally come home, but then I realized that he would have entered through the garage, not our front door. The lights were motion activated, so someone other than my husband was outside. I jumped out of bed and ran to the living room. Through the window, I could see the silhouette of a tall, thin man crouched on our porch. He was leaning over the package, trying to open it. I know I should have called the police, but I wasn't thinking straight. Instead, I threw the front door wide open and screamed out, "Hey, who are you?" The man turned toward me. He was wearing a ski mask, so I couldn't see his face. He had the half-open box in his arms. Immediately, he spun around and started running toward the street. I chased after him. The man was a good foot taller than me, and I should have been scared, but I really wasn't. Richard worked very hard to provide for us, and I wouldn't let anyone try to steal his things. He raced past our gates and onto the sidewalk, but I tackled him to the ground before he could get any further. He didn't even try to fight me. He just lied on the ground while I pried the package out of his hands. I was about to run back inside and call the police when he screamed, "Wait! Why?" I asked. "Who are you?" He pulled off his mask, revealing a familiar face. I didn't know who he was, but I recognized him from somewhere. I assumed he was one of Richard's employees. "I'm just trying to stop him," he said. "Who? Richard? He's going to kill us all," the man said. "Please, let me explain." "Fine," I muttered. Still lying on the ground, the man said his name was Thomas. He was Richard's accountant. He said that he discovered my husband planning to blow up their office building. He tried to tell people, but no one would believe him. So he had to take matters into his own hands. I asked him what that had to do with our Amazon package, and he just told me to look in the box. The cardboard was already ripped open. I peered inside and saw a bunch of metal pieces and technical stuff. I couldn't tell what it was. "It's the material to make a bomb," Thomas explained. He said that Richard's company was deeply in debt, and rather than file for bankruptcy, my husband planned to blow up the whole building, blame it on someone else, and then cash in on their insurance policy. It didn't matter if some of his employees were in the building at that time. I couldn't believe that. My husband would never do something so terrible. There had to be another explanation. But Thomas looked deadly serious. Slowly, he got to his feet. He begged me to give him the box so he could destroy it. "Do you know where my husband is right now?" I asked. Thomas looked away. I shoved him hard, trying to force an answer out of him. He couldn't look me in the eyes, but he admitted that he'd tied up Richard and left him in his office. He was going to take the bomb material straight to the police. I didn't know what to do. Deep down, I believed him, even though his story was unbelievable. I realized that the only way to find out was to go to Richard myself. With the package still in my arms, I left him behind and ran to my car. Pretty soon, I'd driven all the way to Richard's office. No one was in the lobby. I used my key to let myself in, and then took the elevator up to Richard's office. When I opened the door, I saw him tied to his chair. Sweat streamed down his face. "Thank God you're here," he said. He looked relieved to see me until he noticed the open package in my arms. He started breathing really heavy and said, "Please, untie me, then I'll explain everything." On his desk was the layout of his building, including a little red X where he was planning to put the bomb. That was when I knew that everything Thomas had said was true. I was horrified. I started to leave, and Richard screamed at me to stop. "I was going to do this for us," he said. "All the money we were going to make. It was for us." I left him tied up and went straight to the police station. When I got there, Thomas was already sitting with one of the policemen who didn't look like he believed Thomas at all. I dumped the box of equipment on their table and said, "Everything he just told you is true." As I explained everything, the cop took a bunch of notes, and then he sent three of his officers to find my husband in his office. I finally thanked Thomas for what he did, even if he went about it the wrong way. Who knows how many lives he'd saved, just because he tried to steal that package off my doorstep. My name is Rebecca, and I'm 18 years old. I'm trying to save up money for college, so I've been babysitting for some family friends. I love kids, so it's a pretty fun gig. One day, my next-door neighbor Linda asked me if I was free to watch her son Matthew on the weekend. I didn't know Linda too well, but she always seemed nice. I assumed she was kind of a helicopter parent. I'd often see her playing with Matthew in their front yard, and she seemed to really baby him. Some mothers are kind of like that. I didn't have any plans for the weekend, so I told her I'd be happy to. She told me to come over that Saturday at 6. When I got there, she gave me a printed out list of rules for the house. It included a list of at least a dozen foods that Matthew was supposedly allergic to, plus a bunch of ridiculous directions for how to take care of her son. No TV, no music, no loud voices. It felt like she was a prison warden or something. Once I read the directions, she made me sign the bottom of the paper to make sure that I agreed. I never had another babysitting job like this. I was already starting to regret signing up for it. Linda gave her son an awkwardly long goodbye hug, and then she left. As soon as she drove off, little Matthew breathed a big sigh of relief. I could tell that he was afraid to be himself when his mom was around. Now that it was just the two of us, he started acting like more of a little kid. We played with Legos, and then I took him outside to throw a baseball. He wasn't very good, and he fell a lot, but it was fun. We did that for about an hour, and then I tucked him in and caught up on my homework before his mom came back home. When she got back, she started grilling me on exactly what I did with her son. I told her everything, and then she paid me and let me leave. I thought things went pretty well. But the next morning, Linda called me. She was furious. I had no idea what happened, but she was screaming at me and threatening to destroy me. I told her to slow down and explain the problem, but that just made her angrier. She said something like, "You know what you did," and then she hung up. This happened at 7 in the morning on a Sunday, so I just went back to sleep. I woke up a few minutes later, and right away, I saw that Linda was standing outside my window looking in. As soon as we locked eyes, she ducked down so I couldn't see her. I really didn't understand what her problem was, so I opened the door and said, "Hey, what the hell are you doing?" She was still acting like I'd done something horrible last night. She pulled out her phone and showed me at least a dozen photos of the same thing, Matthew's knee. Apparently, he'd scraped it a little while we were outside. Neither of us noticed it at the time, and all the pictures showed was a single red scratch. "That's it?" I asked. "You hurt my baby," she screamed. She shouted a bunch of other stuff too. She was so loud that my parents woke up and ran into the room. I explained to them what Linda's problem was, and they seemed just as annoyed as I was. My dad politely asked her to get out of our yard. She left, but not before screaming, "This isn't over!" My parents and I had a good laugh after that, but I was still pretty weirded out by the whole thing. I know that moms can get protective sometimes, but this was ridiculous. For the next week, I saw Linda a couple times on our street, and every time, she glared as if she wanted to murder me. I always waved politely, but that didn't help things. The next Saturday, I was hanging out at my house watching TV. My friend Trina was going to come over later, but for now, I was alone. I'd just gotten up to heat some popcorn when I heard someone outside my front door. I thought it was Trina, so I went over and opened it. It was not Trina. Linda was standing on my front porch, smiling darkly. She had a rope in one hand and some sort of paper in the other. "What are you doing here?" I asked. She pushed me to the side and charged into the house. Before I could even react, she grabbed my hair and threw me to the ground. Then in seconds, she tied up my hands. "What are you doing?" I said again. "You hurt my baby," she told me. "I want to teach you how it feels." She sat on my feet so I couldn't move. I tried to wriggle out from under her, but I couldn't. I could see that the paper in her hand was some sort of sandpaper that construction workers would use. Laughing wildly, she pressed the sandpaper against my knee. I couldn't believe it. Her son had gotten a minor scratch on his knee, and in retaliation, this psycho was going to scratch me with sandpaper. "Let's see how long it takes for me to get to the bone," she said. She started rubbing the sandpaper against my skin. At first, it only felt like tiny prickles of pain, but I knew that it wouldn't take long before she drew blood. "Please," I begged, "get off me." She got really close to my face and whispered, "Not until we're even." She started to scratch me again when I heard a knock at the door. Trina was here. I screamed for her to come in, but when the door opened, it wasn't Trina. It was Matthew. He had two policemen with him. "Mom?" he said. The policeman pulled Linda off me and led her out of the house. Matthew came over and said, "I'm so sorry. I knew my mom was going to do something crazy, so I called 911. "You did a good thing," I said. After that, Linda was taken to jail for assault. She lost custody of her son, and he ended up moving in with his dad in another state. My leg healed up pretty quickly, and I went back to babysitting. But from then on, I made sure to reject any offers that gave me a bad feeling. I didn't want to live through something like that again.
My name is Milton, and I'm 30 years old. A few years ago, I decided to rent a house in the woods through Airbnb, just for one weekend. I wanted to spend some quality time with my girlfriend, Amanda, among nature. We were taking our dog, Spith, with us, too. Amanda thought it was a great idea. We arrived there in the early evening on a Friday. I parked the car right in front of the house after driving for 2 hours. "This is wonderful, Milton. It's so peaceful and romantic," my girlfriend said as we got inside the house. It was small but very cozy. It had a fireplace too, which, besides being pleasant, was also very convenient since it was the middle of January. Both me and Amanda were big fans of winter. "Definitely. Today we can just eat and rest by the fireplace. Tomorrow we can explore the surroundings during the day. The fresh air will be good for us. Clean our systems out, you know," I said. "Excellent. I'll prepare the food while you can light the fire. Just like the good old days, huh?" "Yeah, I'm starving," I said. Our dog, Spiff, after being fed, was anxious to go outside. I wasn't very happy with the idea of letting him go out after night, especially in a foreign, wild environment. But he wouldn't shut up. Sometimes you just need to let dogs go out and do what they need to do. He's a smart dog, and according to what we read about the surroundings, there's no bears or other predators that could hurt him, Amanda said. "Yeah, you're right. In any case, it's not like we have a choice." "All right, boy. The night's young. Come on," I said as I opened the door to let Spiff out. Within the next few hours, me and Amanda had our meals, and then we fell asleep, sitting on the comfortable couch by the warm fireplace. We woke up when it was around 2 a.m., and I heard a dog barking in a painful manner deep into the woods. "Oh no, Spiff's in trouble," I said as I got up. "Are you going outside, Milton?" "Of course, I gotta go get him. That's why I brought my shotgun. On the other hand, it wasn't a good idea to bring Spiff. Lesson learned. Stay here, Amanda, and lock the doors when I'm outside," I said as I picked up my gun and prepared myself to leave. "Okay, be careful," she said. And so, I walked outside the door and went into the woods, my left hand holding a flashlight and my right one carrying my shotgun. For a while, I was still able to listen to the noises of Spiff. He appeared to be in pain. I was now extremely concerned. The noise stopped, which didn't make me feel better. But still, I had a good idea of where the noise came from. "I just hope he's all right. Maybe he fell into a hole or something. Maybe he was trapped," I said to myself, trying to be positive. After a while of walking through the trees and bushes, I heard something. Or someone. I tried to remain silent. I could hear someone breathing. I didn't know if it was an animal or a person. But then, out of the blue, or should I say out of the dark, I heard a wicked laughter. And I got hit in the head by something. It wasn't a rock or anything that could take me down, but it still hurt. "Damn! What the... Oh my god, Spiff!" I screamed as I realized the decapitated head of my dog was thrown at me. I was now listening to howls which resembled wolves. Someone was chasing me. I could see red eyes coming towards my direction. It was a tall figure, like a man, running on 2 feet. I didn't have time to figure out who or what it was. I was now running for my life. I heard it roaring and howling like a canine, but running like a man. I shot my gun in the air a couple of times and thought it would scare off the creature, but it kept chasing me, getting closer. "Amanda, open the door! Let me in, for the love of God!" I shouted as I got closer to the house, leaving the forest behind me. I was surprised by 2 things. First, I saw the door was already open. Then, as I looked back, I noticed the creature was no longer behind me. It didn't leave the woods, perhaps frightened by the idea of getting shot. I entered the house, calling for my girlfriend. Terrified, I realized the main room, where we sat by the fireplace, was a complete mess. The sofa and chairs misplaced, destroyed, broken glass. And then I saw my girlfriend, lying on the floor, surrounded by a pool of blood. Amanda? Amanda, oh my God! There was nothing I could do. She was dead. There were bite marks all over her neck. But the bloody floor revealed footprints of a human. In tears, I called the police. It took them almost 1 hour to arrive at the house. I told them what happened. A few hours later, they searched the woods but found nothing, except what was left of my dog. One of the police officers, a man in his 60s, spoke to me in private and said,
"I shouldn't say this to you, but I grew up in a small town nearby. Folks have legends and beliefs about a dog-man creature, half dog, half human. When I was a kid, I didn't see something like that, but as I grew older, I tried to convince myself that my mind was just playing tricks on me. But the fact is, what you described, the creature chasing you, is what killed your dog and your wife. It's undisputed. The footprints, both in the house and in the surroundings, are nothing more and nothing less than those of human. Hopefully we can find what did this to your girlfriend and your dog. I'm sorry for your loss. It's a complete tragedy. And a tragedy it was. Months went by, but nothing and no one was ever found. A few articles and even TV reports spoke about the case, as they mentioned a cryptic legend of a dog man who lived in the woods. The evidence is, in fact, mysterious. Maybe that is true, but it doesn't matter, because I will never get my girlfriend back, or even my dog. Regardless, what is the truth? I will never visit any forest again in my life. And although it's not my fault, I will never forgive myself for what happened.